That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hello, Caviar Dreamers.
I'm Margaret Josephs.
And I'm Lexi Buputo.
And every week we are bringing you entrepreneur real stories from leaders, disruptors, change makers, and risk takers.
We may not be serious, but we seriously mean business. Caviar Dreamers.
Hello, Caviar Dreamers.
We are here, and we are here with a new fabulous friend of ours, Susan Peterson. Hello.
I'm so excited that we're here with Susan Peterson. I just met Susan at an event that we did for my amazing alarm company, Vivint. And Susan was like the bonus, and she's this amazing entrepreneur.
Amazing, right? Is not even the word. Incredible story. Comebacks, setbacks. It's fascinating. Fascinating to us. And you, like the Marge, started your company at your kitchen table.
Yes.
I did.
Basically, yes. Without any money.
No money.
No money.
My husband was in school.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is just so crazy. And I just want everyone to say the name of your company.
It's called Freshly Picked.
Freshly Picked, which everybody has seen. Every celebrity's child wears it. It's a
baby moccasins. Diaper bags, sleep stuff.
Yes. It's all things for your babies. Very chic, fun, amazing. I mean, I was about to call her Kim Jenner. Okay, Kim Kardashian. Kim Kardashian's kids, where every celebrity has worn this.
Yes, yes. We've been very fortunate with our celebrity relationships, yeah.
I know. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. So I just want to say, it was like when I met you, I was like immediately drawn to you. And Noelle, our mutual friend,
yes,
introduced us. And she was just like, basically when she met you, she was like, oh my God, Susan, she's unbelievable. She had nothing. She was like getting scrap metal to start her business. So can we just discuss this because it's so inspirational?
Okay, yeah. So when I started Freshly Picked, my husband was in college and, you know, that was, let's see, Hattie's 16 now. So it was like 14 years ago when my son was born and I wanted to stay home with the kids and we were in college. So we were living off student loans, but every penny counts. You're like so tight. And I had started just sewing stuff and selling it on Etsy and I had a blog. And so I had this very like unpopular blog and really unsuccessful Etsy shop. You know, I was like making it work. And when my son was born, I made a pair of baby moccasins for him because I just wanted them. And it was my first time sewed leather. I had like gotten a big bag of scrap leather from a lady at a yard sale. It was like the end of the day. And I was like, okay, I'll buy this, and throw in the scrap leather. And she's like, fine, because she didn't want to haul it to the thrift store, you know. And I made the moccasins, put them on my blog, just thinking, you know, these are for my son. I was nesting, you know, right before yes. You give birth, you're yeah. doing everything. And the response was insane. And when I mean insane, I mean, my mom wasn't the only one commenting saying, Susan, how do I comment on a blog? It was like seven people that I didn't know that were like, I would buy these. And I was like, oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yes. That says something.
Right. And I'd always told my husband, because we were early day of Etsy, that I was like, if I could find a product that I feel like people liked, I could really make it work. Because I had seen all my friends on Etsy find their product, find their niche, and just take off. And so I made like 20 pairs, put them on my Etsy shop, and they sold out in like 45 minutes.
Wow.
Which at the time,
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was insane. So I just kept putting them in, spending the money as quickly as it was coming in. Cause you know, I didn't know anything about business at that time and ran out of my scrap leather. So I went to the leather store thinking it worked like a fabric store where you can get a yard of fabric or cuts of fabric. And the lady told me I had to buy the whole cow, and the cow was $200. Like a whole hide.
Yeah, the whole hide.
Yeah. Wow. And I was like, I don't have $200. I've been spending it. Yeah,
it's gone. So, and did you know how to charge for your moccasins or whatever?
Not really. I mean, I was charging $20. I think I'd already raised the price to $45, but I was still at the point where I'd get an order and I'd be kind of annoyed because now I had to make the product.
That's, I know. Yeah. I know exactly what you're saying.
Right? But my brother had a window installation business at the time. And he would remove old windows, which are aluminum cased, and then put in new windows. And I convinced him 1 month to just give me all his old windows. So I spent the whole month during nap time and after my kids went to bed banging the glass out of the windows. So at the end of the month, I could take the aluminum to the scrapyard and I made $200.
I mean, that is amazing. That's like ingenious. Like that you were like, I'm not going to borrow from my mother or something. I'm going to do this myself.
Well, she had already bought me the sewing machine. So yes. I was out of favors
yes,
with her.
Yes, 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 yes.
But well, you know what? Like, I think so many times we're like, I wish I could do this, but I don't have the resources. And you actually do. You just have to get creative. And that's what I just did, you know?
I know. That was so smart. So you did that and then you bought the whole cow.
And then from then on, I was able to just save my money, put it back into the business, and continually reinvest.
Now, at what point did you stop making the moccasins and hire someone else?
Probably at like 2.5 years in.
For 2.5 years, you made the moccasins?
Yes. In fact, when Kourtney Kardashian got the moccasins first, I had made the pairs that went to her. The Parents magazine editor reached out to me and said, hey, I followed your blog for a while. I've been waiting for the right celebrity to pair you with. It's Kourtney Kardashian. Will you send out mocks for a photo shoot we're doing? She's going to be our cover story for September. And I was like, yeah, you can buy them in the shop.
That is so funny.
I didn't know how gifting worked at the time.
Yes, yes.
Like, okay. I'm new and I'm like, every dollar counts, you know? I spent the first wad, I had to reinvest.
Yeah, so what'd she say?
She was like, no, Susan, let me walk you through this. So she just walked me through gifting. So I stayed up all night, made like 8 pairs of moccasins, overnighted them to her. She got them. She's like, they're too small.
Well, oh my God.
And I was like, she's like, can you send me the next size up? And I was like, yeah, but you're going to have to pay for these ones. She's like, no. I promise it'll be worth it. So I stayed up all night again, made the moccasins, sent them out. And she's like, I promise I'll send them back. Like, we're just going to use them for the photo shoot. And we got the cover.
Unbelievable. That's amazing. Was that like, did that like ignite everything?
Yeah. And she wrote me after the shoot and she's like, Susan, I'm really sorry. I knew I said I'd send them back, but Kourtney fell in love with them. She wants them. So I gave them all to her.
Okay. That was good.
And
that's
I was
great.
Like, okay, that seems okay. You know?
Yes. Yes.
And then immediately Kourtney was photographed everywhere with Mason wearing the moccasins.
I mean, that's unbelievable. That's an unbelievable story.
It was a huge, huge like leg up for me.
I know. And then you got sewers.
Yes. And then I hired seamstresses. Yes.
So I called them sewers. I'm so sorry.
It's
seamstresses.
Right.
I called them.
Yeah. Or so, stitchers.
And I should know better considering I was in the garment center and I went to FIT. What
you went to FIT?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. You're so lucky.
Some people say that.
I always wanted to like in my stitching area. When I was
stitching.
In my
well, sewers. You were a seamstress. Seamstress. I'm like the sewer, you know, and that's so not right. Because when I was in the garment center, we didn't, you know, which is a low life way to say it. And we called them the sewers in the back room, which is not right. They were the seamstresses.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So how did you learn the business aspect? Because you've grown Freshly Picked to such a tremendous company now. Literally like, you know, someone teaching you about gifting from an editor perspective, like, how did you learn to run a business? Because I think when you're creative, that's the hardest thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of trial and error. And then I'm very aggressive about finding mentors. So Noelle, who you guys met.
Yes.
She was one of my first mentors. And I met her at a trashy book club. And by trashy, I don't mean like smutty. I mean, we'd read bad books that really shouldn't have ever been printed. Like Tori Spelling's storytelling book was one of her books.
All right.
And it's like, just, you know, whatever. How did this get printed? And when she walked in, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, you've met Noelle.
Yes.
She's fabulous.
Sophisticated.
Wonderful, but very understated. Like, she doesn't like the spotlight. And so she either has to seek you out or you have to kind of run into her in order to find her. And I just emailed her the next day and I was like, hey, I think you're cool. Do you want to be friends? And she's like, yeah, come over for lunch. So ever since then, we've been friends.
I absolutely love that. So she guided you in your business.
Yeah. In fact, so Freshly Picked was taking off. I had my stitchers. I was learning everything. And I was like, you know what? We should have a big sale. Why don't we have a sale? We've never had a sale. So I put everything 25% off. And in like a day, we had sold 2,000 pairs of moccasins.
Oh my gosh.
We didn't have leather for. We're not made. I didn't know what I was going to do. So I called Noelle crying because I was so overwhelmed. And she listened to me for like 10 minutes. And then she's like, okay, are you done? And I was like, yeah, you know. Yeah. And she's like, oh, boo fucking who, Susan. It's so hard to be successful. What are you going to do? And I was like, oh, I don't know. And so my idea at the time was I was going to give everyone's money back to them.
No, no, that's so funny.
Get my shit together and have, and then redo it. And she goes, absolutely not. Yeah, that
no,
was
no, absolutely yeah. not. No, no. You just have to write that, do the demand, you know, yes. It's going to be delayed.
Yes. And so that's what she goes. She gave me that advice. And then she goes, you know what you're going to do is you're going to get some sleep. You're going to wake up tomorrow morning. You're going to put your big girl panties on. And you're going to figure this shit out.
Yeah, that was your big girl panty moment. I was going to ask you that later, but that was your big girl panty moment.
Yes. Yes. And Noelle is the type of mentor and friend that will never lie to you and will never feel sorry for you. And I feel like at the time I needed that, because I think sometimes as women, we want to spare feelings. So we aren't exactly truthful all the time. Like, no, he's nice. No, you look great. You know? And she would never do that for me. And it was exactly what I needed at the time.
I think that's very important. I like that piece of advice also. I think we should not blow smoke up people's asses in a lot of situations, because it's not helpful.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes your friend just had a baby. She's like, how do I look? You look great. You're doing wonderful.
That's important. Yeah. That's the time.
But there is times when like candor and like brutal honesty is actually so much more important for that person.
I agree. Listen, I don't want people to go out when they, you know, it's an important event and they happen to look like shit. And do I look good? I mean, if it's no time to change it, I say, you look great. You know, I want them to feel good. But if there's time to change your outfit, you know, that's like, this is patient. You better change. This is an important night. Or with business.
Yes.
You don't want people, you know, to save money or sacrifice or, you know, costly mistakes. Exactly. You have to tell people. You have to be brutally honest.
Right. Exactly. So she was amazing. And since then, I've just always sought out mentors that I feel like are a couple steps ahead of me in business. And I am very aggressive about making them my friend and asking for help.
Good. I like that.
I love that, because I think that is the two of the things that women struggle with the most. Mm. Aggressively seeking out friendship. I think women wait for people to be like, oh, come over, and asking for help.
Yeah.
I think women are afraid to be judged because I think of like the patriarchal society where you're like, if you're a woman in business, you better not ask for help because you don't want to seem weak. You don't want to seem like you don't know what you're doing. But it's actually so powerful to ask for help.
Yeah. And people want to help. Most people are good and they want to be helpful.
It's true. Now, do you seek out women and men?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Me too.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I love my male friends that are in the business world. I think, honestly, it's my favorite part about being married is having these platonic relationships with men. And when you're single, it's harder to have platonic relationships with men. Yeah. But when you're married, I have great friendships with some of my male mentors. And now I mentor men and women as well.
Oh, I love that. Because if you're not busy right after this, I'm going to make you come to lunch with us.
Let's go.
Now we have to go meet not only us, our friend who's been on the podcast, Jocelyn.
Yes.
She needs some advice. And I think, you know, you're the brutally honest person.
Oh, I would love it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to take it's right a glamorous true. Lunch. Okay.
At what point in your business did you do Shark Tank? Because I know you did Shark Tank.
It was about 4 years in.
And was that helpful?
Oh my gosh, amazing. Well, at the time, so my episode had 7.5 million people watch.
Wow.
Wow.
Which Shark Tank, like, you just can't get that kind of viewership now.
No.
No.
No. Because that was in the, you know, that was like in the beginning of Shark Tank.
Yes.
Like, it wasn't heavily, yeah, so it wasn't diluted. It was a thing. People
I
were obsessed.
I was season 5.
Season 5.
And
so what did the sharks say? Because I'm sorry, I didn't watch that.
Oh, no, it's fine. It was so long ago now. People are like, what was it like? And I'm like, I have no idea. I know reality television and is traumatic.
It's traumatic. It's traumatic.
It is traumatic from top to bottom, the whole thing. But the sharks, I got a really good edit, and they honestly, the sharks are the nicest people ever in there. Mr. Wonderful, the only way you lose Shark Tank is if you do not do your homework. And it's so easy. They ask the same 7 questions to every person. So I watched every single episode. I wrote down every single question that they asked on like a little 3x5 card. And on the back of it, I would put my answer. So every time for like a month, I would be hanging out with someone. I'm like, ask me these questions. So they would just go through the questions ask me. I knew my business top to front or front to back.
The same thing. Good.
I just pulled one of those anyway. And I just went on really prepared and they loved me. But in my research, I was like, Mr. Wonderful is actually really cool. Like, I developed a crush on Mr. Wonderful.
Wow. That's the first time I heard that.
He became one of my celebrity freebies. The other one is Bill Murray, which, anyway.
I don't want to say anything. I'm not going to. Bill Murray and I used to use the same therapist. not my therapist now, Tamar Martin, but we had another therapist that he owns restaurants in Charleston. He's a big Charleston guy. And I used to see him in Charleston because my son lived in Charleston at one point.
Hard to see people living your dreams.
I had no idea about this Bill Murray and you situation. I know
Bill Murray and I have crossed
paths
a few times in the therapist office.
Is he charming in person?
We're both
I imagine
crazy.
He's just magnetic.
Very, very quiet.
Really?
Very head down.
I wonder if he's a tortured soul. I could really.
A tortured soul.
I could
a tortured soul.
Did he go over his time limits in therapy? Were you waiting for him to come out a lot?
No, he was waiting for me. Who probably goes over her time limits. Who definitely.
Of course you did.
Goes over
right?
My,
we would expect nothing less.
Yes. So wait, did a shark invest in your business?
So Damon. Yeah, on the show. And then post show, the deal fell apart, which happens very often.
Yes.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
But it was great. There was no publicity at the time like Shark Tank.
That is unbelievable. So I just want everyone to. So then you built up your business to very large and someone bought in.
Yeah. So I have incredible investors. They're called Seidler Equity Partners. And they came in and bought 60% of my business. And so today, together with them, we run the business.
Which was great. So you cashed out a huge amount, we're not going to say, but it was a tremendous amount, life-changing.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up, my dad's a school teacher. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. She would do odd jobs here and there. That's where I learned to work was for my mom because she never stopped working. She was either cleaning the house or like delivering pizza or making bread for the neighbors or something, you know? So no one in my family has ever made a ton of money. My parents owned a home, but my grandparents didn't for a long time. My grandpa drove a school bus. My grandma was a school teacher. Like everyone was kind of just doing their best. And we were the first millionaires in our family. Yeah.
I mean, congratulations.
Thank you.
That is so...
It was really fun. I paid off my parents' house. We paid off my husband's parents' house.
Wasn't that so nice. Fantastic?
Yes, it feels so good.
It does. And your husband must be so proud of you and your kids are so proud of you.
Well, you know, kids are never impressed, but yeah.
I like to say that also because my kids are always like, okay, so what's next? You did this, you did that. All right. That, you know, they expected of me at this point.
Right.
Well, yeah. So big, you know, you're the only one of your friends that work it. So big, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's next? Right? Yeah. Don't you always feel that way?
Yeah. Yeah.
But then something happened, which when you told me this, I think I was physically ill. Joe and I were talking about, Susan told me this story because Noelle brought it up. Was it your controller?
Yes. Yes. So he
did something.
Yeah. He stole. He had a gambling addiction or he has a gambling addiction. And he was able to steal a lot, like most of the money from the business and then a large portion of the money that we had taken off the table.
That you have taken off the table. Yeah. So all the money that you worked so hard for, that you acquired the money, taken off the table, that, you know, that you cashed out, made you guys multimillionaires, this man gambled away.
Yeah. So we were building this beautiful home at the time, which it was our kitchen was on the cover of House Beautiful like a year and a half later. And everyone's like, good job, good job. But meanwhile, I'm in the back, you know, you're in the background trying to keep things together. Like it's a beautiful home, this dream home, which now I realize there's no such thing as a dream home. You live where you live and you make it what you make it, you know. But growing up poor and then kind of having that as one of my aspirations. I was like, I'm going to build this dream home. So I'm sitting there. I would go. I'm good friends with the builder. And I'd go every day because I'm so curious about the building process.
Of course.
And I love to see it done. And the builder would be like, you're the only one who comes and just watches. You don't try to tell me how to do my job. I'm like, I don't know how to do your job. But it's so interesting. And I was sitting there and one of my board members called me and he's like, Susan, this is the worst news I've ever had to give anyone, but he knew the guy and he's like, he's been stealing from you because he finally, like, the walls were closing in, the money was running out. And so he called my board member and confessed to him. And my board member called me and he's like, you know, all the money in the business is gone and a lot of your money is gone. And gamblers never know how much they're, you know, any addiction, they never know how much they've actually taken. And he thought he had taken one amount, but it was significantly bigger. And I remember just staring at this hole in the ground, like, what the heck am I going to do?
Because you had to pay the builders.
Because you're in, like, you know, if you built a house, like, it is, you are bleeding, hemorrhaging money.
Believe me, I live in this old house. I'm hemorrhaging money.
Hemorrhaging money.
I finished your house. I was like, because I'm finishing everybody else's.
Right. No, you're hemorrhaging money. So I was like, okay. So I drove to the office, just kind of, I don't even know how I got there. Could have gotten in an accident because I was just like shocked.
Of course.
And call my investors because we were only 6 months into our relationship at the time.
Oh,
I mean, we had been talking for 2 years prior.
The Seidels.
Seidlers, yeah.
Seidlers.
And there's a TikTok where a girl drives her dad's brand new Tesla into a Starbucks and she has to call him and be like, Dad, I drove your Tesla into a Starbucks. And that's how I felt. I felt like they had given me this beautiful gift and life.
Yes. And invested in you because you're so amazing. But you are so amazing and talented. Yes. They believed in you.
Thank you. And so I called them and they were incredible. Like, they're like, okay, we will be on the plane tonight. They were out there that evening, but I had to go. They're like, you actually have to go and report this because there's insurance claims and all these things. So I have this fiduciary duty to my investors. And it was heartbreaking. This kid was one of my really good friends at the time. So I go to the police station because what do when someone steals millions of dollars from you?
Yeah. Oh, God.
I had no idea.
I don't know. I mean, I'd probably run them over with the car.
I had visions of that. But I go to the police station and I stand in line, you know, behind the glass counter because I don't know.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. And then the lady on the microphone's like, what do you want? And I'm like, someone stole some money from me. And she's like, okay, wait over there. So a detective came out and talked to me and he's like, I'm like, I don't know. It's over $1 million. And he's like, well, we don't do that. You have to go to the FBI. And I was like, wait, who does it? So I go to the FBI, and which I didn't know they had one in my small town. And
wow.
What's going on
there? Who would know what to find the FBI?
Yes, right? And
it?
They were like, we're not really doing embezzlement cases right now. We're more worried about child trafficking or something like that. And he's like, you should go to the UBI, which is the Utah Bureau of Investigators. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who even knew that?
Yeah,
right?
Who knew there's a UBI? Yeah. I didn't even know what this is.
Right. So I go there and there's this sheriff, Rich, with cowboy boots with spurs on and a cowboy hat. And I was like, I think I found my guy.
Yes, 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 yes.
And I sat down with him and he's like, we do this all the time. He took down my statement and he's like, we can charge him. We can do this. But it was shocking to me that the police couldn't charge him. Like, if he would have stolen candy bar from 7-Eleven, he would have been in jail already. But because it was a white collar crime, the police couldn't do anything about it. And the FBI got to decide whether or not they did it. And then it was just like shocking that white collar crime just really goes unpunished a lot.
And this was, and especially because like people see white collar crime as crime on a corporation.
Yes.
But behind that corporation
is a person.
A person.
Yes. Building a house.
Yes. Building a house
and looking at a hole in the ground.
Yes.
So what happened then?
Well, when we found out, we had $30,000 in the bank account at Freshly Picked. And
you normally had tons.
Tons. Well, we had brought in like, there was millions of dollars on our balance sheet. And I had payroll due in a week. And so I actually had no time to break down. Like that whole day I was doing all this stuff. I went home and I remember I just sat in my driveway and I was finally able to cry then. like after 10 hours, you know? And my sister came up to the door and I told her what happened. And she was just like, it was shocking to the point where you'd wake up and you were like, what just like shocking yes. trauma?
Like your own, like a movie of your right. own life.
Yes, yes. Right.
And the first thing the Seidlers told me is they're like, you can quit. If you want to be done, that's fine. Because to them, like, you know, they have billions of dollars under management. This was, it could be a rounding error for them. And they were like, you can quit if you want. And I really, that night, took a lot of time to think about it. And I was like, I'm not a quitter. I think I can do this. So I just got up the next day and I was like managing our personal finances and then managing the business finances. And it was like, okay, what can we do to make enough money for payroll? Cool, done. And the Seidlers and I had to put a bunch of my money back into the business. We did what's called a bridge loan and just got to work. I mean, it was for about 3 years, I would say. At first, it was like every day finding something that what had been messed up. And then it was every week and then every month and then every quarter. But it took about 3 years to like untangle the mess.
Wow. And how did you, and you wound up paying for the house?
Oh gosh, it was wild. But yeah, wound up paying for it. Yeah, I figured it out.
So stressful.
I mean, I felt like that level of Dante's Inferno where you push the rock up the hill every night and then you go to sleep and the rock's at the bottom of the hill and you, or you push it up every day and then you go to sleep. Like it just felt like again and again and again.
This is a story of like resilience of no other, because you really build something up. But the other part of the story that I want everyone to hear, which also shocked me, is that you forgave this man and you still have a relationship with him, somewhat of a relationship.
Yeah. So it was so important to me. I've known a lot of women who their story is, I would have blank, but this happened to me when I was younger. And I forgave him for me, first and foremost, because I didn't want to carry that with me. And it just, it's too much. And it took a long time. I mean, it was a lot of prayer, a lot of like meditating, a lot of stuff. And every time something came up for the business or for a house that like was a mess from the fraud, I was like, oh, I thought I was through this, you know? So it took a really long time to forgive him, but he was in jail. In 2019, I got a letter from him and we hadn't talked. Like we hadn't talked during the trial. We hadn't talked at all. And it felt like, I think step seven where you make amends. And it was like, here's what I know I did. Here's how I know it affected you. I'm sorry. You know, I'll work the rest of my life. And I had already forgiven him at that time. I had been driving home about 6 months previously in the morning, and I, you know, you kind of pick at your old wounds a little bit, and yes. I'd pick at it and it felt gone. And I told my husband, I was like, it's gone. Like I've forgiven him. Like, I feel like we can move on with, I feel like I can move on with my life. So when I got that, it felt good, but I was like, oh, well, I've already forgiven him. And it just, it felt good, but I didn't feel like it was necessary. And then I just kind of sat on it and prayed. Like I'm a big prayer. And
what is your background?
What's
religion?
I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good.
And I was praying, and in February, so I got the letter in December. In February the next year, I woke up and just at like 3 a.m. and it was like, you have to write him back right now. And how it would work is he would send me a letter and I could send him an email. I couldn't send him an email. So I had this email kind of drafted in my head and I just wrote it out real quick, which was like, hey, I forgive you. You know, like, I think you're a good person. I really do. I think he's a good person who made mistakes that got out of control and compounded. And he just got to be way too big for him, and wrote him all this stuff. And then, you know, just went about my day. And about a month later, I got an email back or a letter back from him. And he was like, listen, you'll never know, but I got your email. And then I got divorce papers from my wife on the same day. And so it was like this beautiful time that we had where he was in jail. And so he wasn't paying restitution yet. He wasn't having to figure out his life outside of jail, where we kind of, it's so rare that you're on that side of forgiveness. I feel like you're usually asking for forgiveness.
Yes. Mm.
And to be on that side of it was just one of the most beautiful experiences of my life. It's sacred to me, actually.
Wow. I mean,
that's impressive.
You're such a good person.
Incredibly impressive.
Very, very impressive. Very, very impressive.
You do it for you, though.
I agree. I agree. Forgiveness. I've said that a lot too. I do a lot of forgiveness, and it's about.
It is it's a selfish act at the end of the
it
day.
It is. It is.
But it pays dividends. Unreal.
I agree.
Yeah.
But I mean, that would be a tough one for me, but I'm learning from you.
Know what,
and
though?
I think you're teaching me a lot. This is very good.
At the moment it happened, the money still means nothing to me. I know how to make money, so I'm not worried about ever making money. Like I tease my husband this whole time. I'm like, we should move here. I would love to drive the subway. I think it would be so fun.
I would love to drive. I don't know. I haven't ridden this subway in a very long time.
I would love to drive it. Like I could
drive the subway.
Drive it. I'm fascinated by these train drivers. It looks so fun. I could make money doing anything. I could move to the top of any organization. Like I am not afraid of that. Once you know how to do it, it's not hard.
No, I agree. I agree.
And so the money was never an issue for me. The bigger part for me was like the betrayal and feeling
like
your trust.
That's what it is, the betrayal.
Yeah. But I had a wonderful therapist who specialized in betrayal trauma. And I told him my first session, I was like, I want to forgive him and I want to move past this. And he's like, and I was like, and I want to be someone who trusts. Like, I don't want to lose that about myself. I really like that I'm a trusting person. And he's like, okay, sounds good. And so we just got to work on those things.
I'm like mesmerized by this whole story because I feel like that, like you cracked a code that holds people back their entire life.
I think that's what it is. It's the trust. I feel like I've been betrayed a lot and I feel like I'm still a trusting person.
Yes, very.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you get a little wiser with each one, you know, but I love being a trusting. Don't you love being a trusting person?
I do love being a trusting. I like seeing the good in people. I am a trusting person. I mean, I've been burned a lot of times, not like that. To that level.
You know what though? It's the same. Betrayal is betrayal. It doesn't matter if there's money attached to it or if there's like 20 years of friendship.
There is. I've had
betrayal.
Yeah.
Is
exactly.
Betrayal. Yeah. It's the same.
It's true. Yeah. It's absolutely. You're absolutely right. I agree with you. So now tell me, so Freshly Picked totally picked itself up by the bootstraps.
Yeah.
Doing unbelievable.
Yeah. Worked our butts off, repaid the bridge loan, which was just such a relief for me. And I hired a CEO in January. And so I'm totally out of the day to day. And it's wonderful.
Do you still do the design?
No. Nothing. No, none of it. It's so nice.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. When we paid off the bridge loan, I had a full nervous breakdown, which I've never experienced in my life, to the point where I like lost touch with reality and it was really scary. And I got into my therapist and my doctor and I got on antidepressant, which was really helpful for me. And my therapist said, I think that you worked so hard over the past 4 years and you didn't give your body a chance to deal with the trauma that now it's dealing with the trauma.
That's understandable.
Yes. Yeah. And I took about 6 months off and that was actually really good for the transition of hiring a CEO because when I came back, I was like, okay, I think that I can let go of this. I think I got it to the point where I didn't quit. It's going to move on. It's going to be a legacy brand, which I've always wanted it to be. And I can go do other things. I just need to let go.
So what's next for Susan Peterson?
I don't know. You know when you're 9 months pregnant and someone asks you if you're going to have another baby?
Yes.
And you're like, I don't know. Yeah. I started a podcast, which has been amazing. My kids are late teens. Hattie's 16. She's a senior. And Gus is 14. And I'm just holding on to these last couple of years with them living in my house, like it's my oxygen. And I've just been really enjoying spending time with them. And, you know, I really feel like I build what I need to build and I end up where I need to end up. I don't believe in coincidences. I think that life is beautiful and things happen and fall into place and the universe has your back or God blesses you, however you want to think about it. And I just know that something big is coming. I don't know what it is. It'll be fun.
Okay. Wow. What a great idea. I think this is so great coming off of a lot of the conversations Lexi and I always have. What would you tell your younger self?
Oh my goodness. Like what age?
I know, whatever. So the little Susan, watching your mother bake bread and you know, when you were a little girl. And,
oh my gosh. You try to get people to cry, don't you?
No, I could cry listening to your story.
For her, I would tell her, you're not too much and your love is beautiful.
Oh.
Yeah. For my 16-year-old self, I'd tell her, show your boobs to more people. It's not that big of a deal. These are great.
I like that.
For my 20-year-old self, I'd be like, don't worry. Just have fun in your 20s. You figure it out in your 30s. And for my 30-year-old self, I'd say, you're doing such a good job.
Oh, that's such great advice. That's beautiful things to hear about your life. You know, everybody who comes on the podcast, we ask them, well, I know your big girl panty moment, so you don't have to answer that one. But I always say my success is 50% delusion, 50% determination.
100% margin.
Yes, that's what yeah. I say, because, you know, if I didn't believe my own hype, who would? Yes. You know, if I didn't get through. What are your percentages? Do you believe your successes?
I mean, I feel like almost everything good I have fallen ass backwards into, like tripped, and there it is. I think my ability to not give up is a lot of my success. I think people are so worried about killing your business. You think it's precious. You think it's really fragile. Businesses are really robust, and it is hard to kill a business. My friend Nate Quigley, one of my other amazing mentors, he's like, there's two rules in business. Number one, don't quit. Number two, don't run out of money. And
two A
is, if you run out of money, see rule number one, don't quit. Just not quitting, waking up every day and saying, I'm not going to quit on this today. It's 90% of the battle.
I agree.
Yeah. We ask everyone also who comes on, what's your most real entrepreneur real advice?
Just to do not worry about what anyone else is doing around you. Entrepreneurs, the reason we do it is because it doesn't look like anything else. There is not a path to follow. It is in you. And a lot of times what you're doing is like motherhood. It doesn't feel like it fits a script. If it looks crazy from the outside, you might be doing it right.
Okay, I love that
a lot.
That's very important and poignant, because I agree with that, because sometimes I'm just like, you know, we've never run a beverage company. We've never done this. And I'm just like, well, everyone's like, well, do this. And I'm just like, well, I don't know. That doesn't feel right to me. Do you ever feel that way?
Yes. Yes.
And sometimes I'm not a know-it-all.
Because it doesn't come with a handbook.
Don't you guys feel like it's so much like motherhood? Because you're like, people will be like, do this. And you're like, no. I know what's best for my kid.
Exactly.
It's so true. And you get guilted sometimes and shamed into doing things that you think are a good idea.
Uh-huh.
But you know in your gut that they're not. And that's in business and with babies.
Yes.
It's so true. Well, this has been so great. I love having you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. I think everyone is going to die over this episode. They're going to just absolutely love it. And people are going to be obsessed with you. Tell everybody where they could find you.
Okay, so Freshly Picked is at Freshly Picked on Instagram. I am Susan.M.Peterson on Instagram. And you can go to FreshlyPicked.com too.
And what's your podcast? Tell them your podcast.
Oh, my podcast is called Started From the Bottom.
Started From the Bottom. I love that. I can't wait to listen to your podcast
too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, girls.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
And if you love the podcast, don't forget to leave us a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts.
Follow me at The Real Margaret Josephs.
And me at The Life of Mrs. B. And the podcast at Caviar Dreams Tuna Fish Budget.
Tune in every Wednesday for new episodes. Keep dreaming, Caviar Dreamers.